when we think about what metrics should people reporting, I care less around what metric it is. I think what's more important is what you do next, what you ask next, what you link it to, what you do with the data is actually more important. Yeah. Like, I don't care if you have a high CSAT or NPS or product market fit. If it's not driving action within your company, then why are you doing it? Like, why are you wasting members' times, you know, bothering the survey, interrupting their flow, making them answer a long format? If you're just doing it and using it as a vanity metric, then I would say shame on you.
I'm Ben Grenell, part of the early startup team here at Levels. We're building tech that helps people to understand their metabolic health, and this is your front row seat to everything we do. This is a whole new level. In any company, you can track as many or as few metrics as you want. In many cases, companies will track things like revenue. That's an obvious one. If they're a consumer product, a social network where they're focused mostly in the interim when they're getting going on things like daily active users. How engaged are people? You can focus on cohort retention and the list goes on. There's also another metric where you think about how willing are people to refer the product to someone else. Well, the two metrics are PMF, that's product market fit, how sticky is a product, and NPS, net promoter score, how willing are people to suggest your product to others. Well, when thinking about metrics, you have to wonder, are they mutually exclusive? Should you track one? Should you track both? Can they be used together? What's the outlook on it? Well, these are things that we've talked about internally for some time now, so it was time that we sat down and recorded a podcast about it. A few of us, Chris Jones, head of member experience, Josh Moorer, head of global operations, and Scott Klein, head of product, we all sat down and we had a roundtable discussion, really somewhat of a debate. What should our outlook be on these metrics? How should we track them? How should we think about using them and taking that information and doing things with it? It was a great conversation. Here's where we kick things off. So this has been a long time coming. This is the NPS, PMF, and any other acronym you feel like bringing up podcast, where we're going to talk about the idea of net promoter score and product market fit and which to measure and why. There's not necessarily a right answer, but I think everybody has a different outlook of what we should do and why. So we'll leave it there. Scotty, what are you thinking? I know you're pretty deep on this idea of product market fit, and Chris Jones is a little bit deeper on NPS.
Yeah, I feel like we're all about to like bet on a single horse and then watch them all race and win. One of them's going to win. No, I mean, to give some context, this all got kicked off because we wanted to write a memo about building what's called an NPS unicorn. And I've since found out that the framing of that NPS unicorn is in contrast to building a valuation unicorn, which I think is that's a great rallying point to be focused on membership and retention as opposed to just building something that's good at raising money. So I think the unicorn part I actually like, but I think I've at least personally had enough time with NPS to find it to be a bit subpar and sometimes distracting in a way. And so I think the thrust of what we want to hash out today is what people's experience has been with NPS, what can we learn from it? And when we talk about other measurement devices, product market fit's the one that I suggested. I think Chris has another one that I hadn't even heard of, so I'm excited to hear it on the fly. What do these measurement devices mean for us? What can we take from them? Which situations are they applicable? And which do we go forward with?
Let's set the table with rewind all the way. Like, what is NPS? What is product market fit? And why do they matter? Because I think that's something that can be missed sometimes. So, Chris, you can dive in on NPS.
Sure. So NPS, net promoter score. At the highest level, you ask the question of how likely are you to recommend a product or a service to your friends or colleagues? Probably all of us have seen this survey 1,000 times from all the products we use all the time. It's really common. And what you're doing is you're looking for people, you want more people that are promoters of your brand or your product than are willing to kind of bash you online. So how it works is on an 11-point scale, you take your 9s and 10s, which are your promoters, the people that are advocating for your product, or at least say they are, and you take that percentage minus the 0 to 6s, which is your detractors. Those are the people that are likely going to be saying, don't get it, it's too expensive, you know, go somewhere else. And you're looking for your promoters as a percentage minus your detractors to come up to your net promoter score. So typically, the range is negative to 100 to 100. So you can, I've actually worked at several companies where they had a negative NPS. And that's always a fun challenge. But in the end, usually they say, like, the average is about a 30, 35, kind of regardless of industry. You start getting pretty good when you get above 40, above 60 is really good. And you get above 80 and you are in the elite status.
And that's that idea of NPS unicorn, where there are only a couple companies in the world that have hit this 90 and above status. And I think that's where we started to think through, what does that actually mean if we were to be an NPS unicorn, as we referred to it? The companies that fall into that bucket, I think, are Tesla and Peloton. As a benchmark, Apple is what, below 50, around 50?
I would say about 60. I mean, 60. A lot of times it depends on who's doing the survey, who they're surveying, and through what mechanism. So like, one company could be running 10 or 15 different NPS surveys and get 10 different answers depending upon how they're doing it, who they're interviewing, where it's posted, you know, time of year. So it's you know, like any survey, it's super easy to manipulate just upon like, oh, like, let me get a higher score. Well, let me survey the people that are more engaged with the product or service, and naturally your scores are going to go up.
Why don't we go into this idea of PMF to product market fit, like what it is, why it means, or what it is, what it means, why it's important, and decipher between all of these things. There's a time and place for NPS. There's a time and place for product market fit. And there's a case where some products might actually have neither or both. And so those are all things that we can dive into once we get through it. But that's why there might not be a right metric, but there are ones that might be more applicable at different stages of companies. So we'll have to go into, Scott, you can dive into product market fit. And then sure. JAM saw ground floor Uber to global Uber, where I'm sure there were things that mattered at different times in a rapidly scaling company that grew very, very quickly.
I'll kick off with product market fit. The biggest defining characteristic of it is that it takes what was NPS in a very outward focus, which is to say, are you willing to talk to this service about your friends? The subtext is, do you love this thing so much that you're going to go out of your way to recommend it to people? And product market fit switches it to be a much more inwardly focused question. So the question of product market fit is, how would you feel if we just took this product that you're using away from you? There's three answer modes. You've got, I would be extremely disappointed, I would be kind of disappointed, or I kind of wouldn't care and I would be fine with it. And the math is to just look at the top answer, and there's no subtraction going on. It's just what percentage of the users are asking, I would be extremely disappointed. This was popularized by, I think, Rahul Vora, who created it as part of founding of his company, Superhuman. It was featured on the First Round blog most recently. And so it's just an alternative narrative to, how do we come up with a quantified value of understanding, are we on the right track to get to product market fit? Are we finding people that are loving our product so much that they're not liking it in a lukewarm way? I think for most startups, they're focused on more on getting a rabid initial fan base than they are that may be smaller than they are a much larger lukewarm fan base, which is likely to just kind of fall out quickly over time. And so,
So you noted that that's a rather new metric. NPS has been around since the 90s. And what they both have in common is that they're essentially asking a question one step removed, because really we want to know, like, how's it going? How are we doing? Do you like this? But instead of asking that, on the first thing we ask, how likely are you to refer this to a friend? And that's useful because you can compare other industries and other companies. As you noted, Ben, there are certain sort of star waltz of industry that are like 90s and above, and Apple is in the 70s at one point, or maybe a little bit less now. So it's good to compare one thing to another. And, you know, airlines and utilities and the like are always very, very low. And then the newer one is kind of like, well, I want to know if I'm on the right track. Like, NPS is sort of like, you've used the product, you have consumed it, and you understand it. Are you going to share it? And it measures virality and how likely people are literally to refer to a friend. Whereas this new metric is kind of like, we're still figuring this out. We're not United Airlines. We're rapidly iterating software. And we want to know how sad you'll be if we take it away, which is clever. I mean, it is sort of another riff on how we doing? How's it going? And I'll speak for a bit more if it's okay, like sort of why I'm here. This originated, I think, as a chat either on Notion or Threads about like what the right thing to measure is. And I'm on neither side. I'm actually in some ways on the side of like measure everything, but that actually these two things might be suboptimal given the data that we have. So if you're United Airlines and someone uses you once in a while, you might want to say like, how was that experience? Are you likely to tell friends about it in a good or bad way? But for technology where people are going to be interacting with it on a daily or hourly basis, I think we can do better than asking them a sort of roundabout question like, hey, if you were a different person or in this hypothetical situation, like if we give you this kind of roundabout thing, can we shake some information out of you? Really, instead, we can see, are you logging food frequently? Are you opening the app? Are you engaging with the software? Have you kind of stopped doing that? Those sorts of metrics in my mind are more interesting because they're direct. They are like, literally, do you like it? I don't have to ask you. I know if you're liking it because you're using the app or not.
Yeah.
So I'm in that third bucket.
The micrometrics, we'll call them.
I really enjoy living in the hybrid world. So having leveraged CSAT, NPS, lots of metrics at half a dozen companies. And for context, I've probably done 20 million NPS surveys across 14 languages at half a dozen companies. So lots of like war stories and wounds. But where, regardless of the metric, where I had the most success is when we merged it with the log data to actually get a lot of more of like when someone says that they're satisfied or they're happy or they're enjoying the product, what did they do? And let's not do it by asking them 50 questions in an hour-long survey. Let's actually bounce it up against their log file data to be like, do people who log food, are they having a better experience? Do people that have, you know, more friends, are they enjoying the game more? So working for a lot of analytical companies where you have all this log data to say, let's look at all the data of all of our members or all of our users and gain it. And just using something like NPS or CSAT or a thumbs up, thumbs down, just to add a little bit of color around how they're feeling. Because the example I've had at one company was our most popular games, our most profitable games had negative NPS because they were trapped in this almost gambling addiction and they couldn't get out of it. They felt bad about it. So it was good for us to not purely just look at the whole like users engagement, how often they're playing, but like how they felt about it. Of like, were we actually making the planet a better thing or helping them improve their lives? So I index a lot more with JM on looking at the data we do have from a behavioral log file, but adding occasional surveys just to provide more color on it.
There's one more, I think, piece of information that's important to line up here. And that is that usually when these surveys are offered up, they will ask an optional follow-up question that's just a free-form text input. And I think that that is a point that is often missed, but should not be, because you start to line up scores with specific verbiage that you can then tie back to why people are enjoying their experience or they're not. And so I think that, you know, regardless of what we do around asking the question to get to a quantified angle, Chris, I think you're right. There's demographic data that comes into these answers. There's a lot of metadata just surrounding it in general, I guess we could say in the more general case. But then, yeah, there's also an opportunity to ask maybe one follow-up question that could be highly targeted or highly freeform so that we can try to line up. If people are upset with the experience, is there a clear reason why? Oftentimes, I think both of these numbers are really couched in the reality that users are oftentimes, they're good at expressing their emotional state, but they're not good at articulating why with words, if that makes sense. So they can tell you from a scale of 1 to 10 how they're feeling temperature-wise. But if you ask them to articulate what would make that be better, they're not product people. It's not like they're generally just going to tell you faster horses, and that's not what we're here to build.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree, Scott. When we think about what metrics should people reporting, I care less around what metric it is. I think what's more important is what you do next, what you ask next, what you link it to, what you do with the data is actually more important. Yeah. Like, I don't care if you have a high CSAT or NPS or product market fit. If it's not driving action within your company, then why are you doing it? Like, why are you wasting members' times, bothering the survey, interrupting their flow, making them answer a long format? If you're just doing it and using it as a vanity metric, then I would say shame on you.
Yeah.
People are taking time to answer questions, to fill it out, especially for open, you know, they spent energy to give you feedback around what they think about your product or service. And if you're not taking action on that as a company, then don't ask them at all.
One of the hardest things about metrics too, especially in the space we're in, is our product has a very wide scope as far as segments go. And so there could be like the jobs to be done of levels for a certain segment. Let's say people who are focused on weight loss. The value prop of the product is entirely different than somebody like a biohacker who wants accountability. And so their outlook on product market fit as a metric, NPS as a metric, what they actually do in product, like when you start to get to some of the micro metrics that JM was referring to, it's very wide. And so we have to start to link all these things and say, is the product serving the right purpose for this segment? And then how do we, from a product standpoint, back to the work Scott's doing day in, day out, it's like, what do we actually need to do to change the product so that it doesn't become the Homer Simpson car? It's like, we just right. bolt on all these things and then it doesn't really work for anyone.
I think what you're saying is that the context of who the person is will, you know, if it's a weight loss app, someone who has no interest in weight loss will not be devastated if it goes away, whereas someone who's finding a lot of utility in the weight loss features might. So there's totally. Sort of like
yeah.
the context of who the person is. And particularly with something like Levels, which is appealing to a large group of people with all different needs, there's some noise in there for sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one thing to touch on, which I think it came up in Notion or in Threads, wherever the conversation was, about the idea of some products can have a high product market fit and a low NPS. Some can have a high NPS and a low PMF. We'll go to acronyms now. And some can have both. So this is personal experience, and again, anecdotal. Huge fan of Mini Coopers. Love them. So high product market fit for me personally. Would never recommend it to any of my friends and have said like, they've said, I'm going to go buy one. And I'm like, no, don't. Meanwhile, I've owned a couple of them, right? And like, I will go get another one because I just love it so much. So it's like, and I devastated if it went away. So it's like high product market fit, terrible NPS. And then other products, personally for me, like Whoop, have a high NPS, like very willing to recommend it to people, but lower product market fit where if I'm not using it because I don't like wearing things on my wrists, like I actually don't miss it that much. And then the middle products are ones that have both. It's like AirPods. Recommend them to everyone and super devastated if I don't have them. So it's like, which is the right metric to use? And you're like, well, if many started paying attention to like people not recommending their vehicle because they're mechanically the worst, like I hate to dunk on you, Mini, because I love you so dearly, but like mechanically but they're terrible.
I'm not going to recommend you to a friend.
So like they should figure out why. And then Whoop, it's like, well, what is not making the product sticky from a product market fit standpoint? And you can extrapolate this to segments far and wide, but like there is merit in both, I think, in some respects.
Right. I would abstract that to say that they basically measure different things. You know, if something has a sort of halo around it, it is very popular to like that thing. You want to be seen with that thing. That might be different than like, I derive personal utility from it. Is kind of what you're saying, right? And so you sort of want to be both. I think having one and not the other is kind of risky. Like I think if everyone is willing to refer you to a friend, but no one would be devastated if you went away, I think that suggests yeah. you have some like short-term magic, but you have a problem because that won't have staying power once you're out of vogue, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, the divergence is where it gets scary.
So Ben, when you brought up the Mini Cooper example, it resonated with me because I had a Mini Cooper for 10 years and I loved it, but it was a love-hate relationship. My wife hated the car because it was too loud, made noises, was in the shop all the time, but I loved it because it was unique and drove around like a, you know, golf car, like no other car operated like it. So when we moved to Montana, she's like, you don't need a Mini Cooper in Montana. Where are you going to drive it? So I gave it to my nephew, 16-year-old boy, thinking going, now I'm going to be the cool uncle, giving him a Mini Cooper.
Uncle Chris.
That's a stick. And it was my biggest like recommending the car to him. It lasted 6 months and my sister said, yeah, he's going to get rid of it because it's been in the shop twice and he can't afford the repairs. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. yeah, no harm, no foul. Like, I love it, but it's, you have to baby that thing and know what to do and listen to the little purrs to know, like, is that really, you know, going to go in the shop for a $2,000 repair or not?
We'll have to share Mini Cooper stories. I'm sure we've got a few road trips to share.
Right. And I think you're talking about a divergence because of a love-hate relationship and the utility versus, you know, how functional it is. But I think there's so many other like ways that that could happen. This is sort of a repeat of what I just said earlier, but like if something is cool seeming, or maybe even the reverse, like there's something that I really like using, like my MacBook M1 Max or whatever. I love it. It's the best computer I've ever owned. I don't know necessarily that I'm going to refer friends to it because it was expensive. And I don't want to say like, you should go buy the top of the line MacBook. That might not be right. So that's sort of the flip. And the other way is if something is cool, it's super cool, but you don't really care, right? I think those are the risks as well.
I think to set some more context for why we're thinking deeply about this right now or trying to settle on what's going to work for us as a company going forward. Levels has been around for a couple years. Our NPS is actually doing quite well right now. I think we're in the 50s or something like that. I mean, it's high enough that I would consider us to be like really, really, really a well-received product.
A semicorn.
We're a semicorn. That's going to be the next like laptop sticker. It's just like a weird looking like half like, you know, their unicorn semicorn.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah. As a product, we're off to a good start. But when you look at our business model, we're in the process of pivoting to what we're calling our membership model. So we're going to give you access to a bunch of products and services at cost. We're going to charge you a yearly membership fee. When you look at membership-based businesses, retention is the single biggest factor that's going to be the predictor of the health of your business. And so when we are looking at NPS and we're looking at product market fit or CSAT or some other representation of a metric, the one that I really want us to drive toward, at least in the product organization, is what is going to be a leading indicator of stickiness. So with NPS, our setup right now, I love it. We've got a great NPS score, but we're starting to get these little insights into people that are maybe high on the PMF score, but low on the NPS score. So some examples are, we get people that might do NPS at like a 5 or 6, which is usually a detractor, but they really would be upset if we took levels away. And when we ask them why, they would say, well, you know what? It's a health product and I don't want to recommend health things to my friends. Like there's just some structural reasons why this may be the case. It costs $400 for the first month of levels right now. That's maybe a bit of a status thing that people might not want to wade into. In other cases, you might have somebody who's treating symptoms for PCOS or a much more intimate health problem that they're trying to just deal with on their own. They're going to be really low on the NPS side, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing a bad thing. It may be quite the opposite. So I think it's important for us to sort of pick a metric that's going to be a leading indicator of stickiness. Because if we were to look at these people's NPS scores, we would be rightly concerned. We would call them up and ask, what can we do differently? And the answer would be nothing. I love the product and I want you to keep doing it. And so I want us to have these leading indicators that can give us reason to act and that we can sort of ideally slice the data up in a way that we can take action to improve. And I'm just not sure NPS is that for the product like product market fit is for the product.
With the lens of product, I fully agree with you. And I think product market fit for the product team is where we should be spending more of our time. I think having multiple metrics is great because I'll use an example of on the support, if I put my support hat on, if we only had product market fit and we're driving, even with open-ended comments, I'm likely will never going to hear comments about customer support or the reason that I'm disappointed that Levels isn't around is because of the level of customer support is likely never going to come up in even the verbatims. So NPS to me can actually cover a lot more areas than just product around marketing, around what we're doing kind of holistically as a company. But I agree, if I was in your shoes as a, you know, kind of head of product, product market fit is going to be more tailored towards your needs and likely more actionable, where NPS is going to be a much kind of broader thing that can cover on lots of areas.
It's interesting. Yeah, I don't know that that framing came up when we had that discussion, but what I'm hearing from you is that when people get asked the NPS question, they're taking a more holistic approach to the entire company as opposed to specifically their interaction with the product.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Let's go deep into thought exercise. And there's a couple things to riff on here. The first is the old adage of if Henry Ford asked people what they wanted, it would be a faster horse. Like we've heard that so many times, but like, let's use the horse as an analogy. So you ask somebody, would you recommend a horse? Horses, like there's horses and cars are just coming out. So it's the Model T is getting born as far as the first highly produced production vehicle. And you ask people like, would you recommend a horse to your friend? And they're like, yeah, for sure. Would you be upset if the horse went away? And you're like, yeah. And then the idea is like, because if your horse went away, there'd be a car. And they're like, I don't want a car. There's no roads. Like, so it's going to get a high product market fit score because people are like, there's nothing better than a horse. And it's like, because sometimes people can't see the future as it's being built. And that's like, fair enough. So let's use this thought exercise of going back to something JM said at the beginning of this, which was, what happens if we just pay attention to product metrics? Like, what are people actually doing in the product? And maybe it's a stage-based thing. Imagine we didn't measure NPS, we didn't measure product market fit, but we paid a lot of attention to what people were actually doing in the product, maybe more so than we do now. One analogy or one like something to dig deeper into is something Chris brought up in his ops deck today, which was, how are people interacting with content in product? So we have this heuristic right now that content is very important in product, and it might be because way longer conversation of like format, length, type of content, let's not go there. But like, imagine if we didn't pay attention to those micro metrics from a product standpoint, and we started doing all this product work to be like, everyone wants content in product. We've heard it qualitatively. We know that that's what's going to give us good product market fit. And then we go and we build against it. But the metrics that are like, what are people actually doing are showing us like, it doesn't actually matter, right? So there's probably a case for everything, but it's more a matter of like, what do you guys think about stage? Like, is there something that's more important at certain stages of a company and some things that matter less?
From where I would say, as for startups, product market fit is much more important than NPS. NPS is really to be used after you've established product market fit. Like, it's more around continuous improvement to continue to grow to scale. But where we are at, like we should be spending kind of probably more time on product market fit and using NPS as kind of more of just like a catch-all and use it, just make sure we're not missing anything. But startups should definitely be focused on product market fit first, NPS second.
Chris, what do you think the criteria are or like the stage are, or is it just a feel where we feel like, okay, now we're ready for NPS? Let's just say we threw the entire thing away and we just like did a detox and we only had 3 months of, the next 3 months, we're just going to do product market fit. At what point do we go, all right, we're ready? Like we've graduated into this stage of company where we need NPS. Like what are the criteria for that?
Less of a criteria, more of an observation of when your product and your service starts to stabilize, where it's like you're making less and less dramatic changes to it. And you feel like, okay, we now know what our product and services are. Like we are changing and experimenting with what is it? What, you know, should we have blood panels? Should we have dietitians? Like we're trying to throw a lot of stuff against a wall to figure out like what sticks. And every time we do an experiment, we get feedback. Like our product is likely going to look nothing like it does today, a year from now, versus someone like, okay, yes, we definitely have carved off our niche. You know, we're making minor tweaks to the product and tweak services. So if you're really having some big swings from your product roadmap, definitely not the time for NPS, much more on product market fit. So stabilization of the product roadmap would be my milestone.
The micrometrics are an interesting thing because if you only pay attention to that, then you might not find what people actually want that's going to make the product sticky. So let's use Superhuman, where the main value prop, when Rahul did that exercise with the team, speed was like the number one thing. And so then you go into like extrapolate, what does speed mean? Like is speed the speed at which you can use shortcuts to like draft emails? Is it the browser being able to process and triage things faster? Like there are all these things that speed could be, but they actually took all those into account. And they said like, how do you create a very fast email experience? If they didn't do that, if they didn't look at speed being this factor, they might have been building against features. Like let's say they only paid attention to metrics and they're like, well, a better way of scheduling meetings, calendaring integration, but it's still kind of slow and clunky. You don't get to product market fit. So it is tough because there's, you can also get so deep into analysis that you spend less time experimenting and building and more time analyzing. But there's a fine line of like, you need enough insight to say, what is actually going on? how are things tracking? And then like, what are we going to do about it?
They all do different things, right? I mean, I think it would be hard to figure out that speed is the number one thing that email users are looking for in that segment without explicitly asking them.
Totally.
Right? Like you're not going to be able to infer that from usage metrics. But in the superhuman onboarding that I did back in the day, one thing they like had me do is put the dock icon on my phone and delete the other one or like move the other one so that it would always be there easily. They did something similar on my Mac. And they set me up with a bunch of things that would get me to open the app a lot. And so monitoring simply how much I use it versus not, like they know I'm going to be on email almost every day. Like what percentage of my email share do they have? That's a super useful metric. And I, you know, I'm not saying that they should do that or something like that and not the other things, but I think there's a place for all of them. You know, as you just said, based on the company stage, there are different appropriate things. And I think that's right. You're just going to learn different things for each one. You know, in some ways, if you crush it on NPS, that might imply a high rate of referrals. It might make acquisition easier. People are sharing on social and the like. Product market fit is more about the retention, right? It's about, is someone going to stick around? Like, are they into what we're doing enough, you know, literally that they'd be upset if we went away? We're not going away. So are they going away really is what the question is. So they're just different, right? And I think for food logs, and I think we could probably argue that it's not up for debate that food logging is going to be part of the Levels experience forever or for a while. Seeing if people do food logs is also useful, right? Because that's like a primary feature of the app. Are they opening the app? Are they doing food logs? Are they engaging? Are they looking at the scores? Are they like immersing themselves in the value that we create or not? You know, I think there's some signal in there as well. And so just to be clear, I am not advocating for dumping one over the other. I think they're all super useful for the right time and place.
Yeah. I think my bias on some of this is just to ensure that as we grow, we don't send people on wild goose chases for like week to week variations in our NPS or our PMF score. I've seen many, many analysts spend 2 or 3 weeks of their like working life trying to track down a 3.5 point drop in NPS, going from 10 to 6.5 or something like that. And you see them disheveled in the hallway. And you're like, what is going on? And you're like, well, the CEO is really upset about the NPS drop from 10 to 6.5. And I've been spending the last 3 weeks of my life, nights and weekends included, trying to track down why. And this goose chase turns up no geese at all, ever. It never happens. And so, you know, I think regardless of what we end up using, if we want to use all of them, I'm not opposed to that. If we can have the discipline and the value system set up to just not chase things. One of the examples that Rahul gave that I thought was great was, you know, they use PMF primarily, but any metric that you use is sort of going to go through these fluctuations and those are natural and should be supported. And he gave the example of, you know, as you go through the technology adoption lifecycle, you know, you carve off the next cohort of users that you start to market to, that you're trying to acquire, and they get into the app and they don't quite get it yet. It hasn't quite settled in. And so their PMF scores are naturally going to come in lower than the people that have already been adopted into your system that are really flourishing and doing well. And if you over-rotate and overreact to these sorts of things and you're not diligent about cutting the data up in a way that you understand which cohort of users is actually scoring worse, you're going to kind of think that you're doing something wrong when in fact you're just going through a normal company building process and getting into a new set of users that don't quite get your thing quite yet, but they sort of do. And so they're going to stick around, but their scores are lower. Whereas otherwise, like a naive director or executive might tell you, this is bad, our PMF score is going down, we have to go fix it, you need to go figure out why it's happening, when in actuality, you sort of just get this rolling hill type of situation where these new customers come in, they're not super thrilled, you build some features, they get thrilled, their PMF scores come up, and it starts all over again as you get into the next cohort of users.
I think you described 20% of my career of be getting beat down in the NPS around like, Chris, go find out why this dropped by 3 points or 4 points or 5 points, and what should we go do to fix it? I mean, I really enjoy trying to find that.
Yeah.
Have you seen NPS? Is it possible to move NPS in a material way once you're at 10 or you're at 6? Like, is that possible in your experience?
Yeah. I've seen jumps within a product or a service or a game or of 30 points over a quarter. So wow. you can do a lot to move it. Now you can move it either direction, but I also got asked a lot at several different companies of Chris, how much from the executives of like, how much more money are we going to get if we increase our company or our product NPS by 1 point, just like so they can quantify, like, what does 1 point mean? So I did this at two companies and the data I found was really representative of the industry at norm, where they talk about promoters spend on average 25% more than detractors. And I found two companies that our data was right in line with that. So I did the example like, okay, let's say we go from a plus 40 to a plus 60, which is a big jump and can take companies 3, 6, 9 months of focus to move it that much. You've only moved 10% of your customer base to that 25%, which means you've increased your revenue by 2.5%. And all of that effort to raise your NPS by 20 points, at these same companies, the level of effort to change the buy button from like, make it bigger, make it a deeper shade of green, or doing just an A/B test on the website of the homepage would have been an easier lift to get the same revenue. So sometimes
it's got to be a longer term view, right?
Yeah, you get executives that get fascinated by the, my number has to be higher because I'm better than the competition. I want to use it as a vanity metric. But sometimes the effort to really move it, you're like, well, what are we solving for? Are we solving for retention? Are we solving for revenue? We have better ways to A/B test that, you know, to actually get quicker results faster through experimentation. Like trying to drive NPS as your way to drive company metrics is usually the wrong way to go after it, because it's going to take you way more effort.
It's like an output, basically, not an input.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It's the result of your work and like of the quality of the business and the product and all these things.
Absolutely.
But you wouldn't go and set out to raise it. You go out to be great and be better and make people happier. And then it goes up.
Chris was the analyst that Scott saw in the hallway that was on a wild goose chase, but he didn't have his binoculars. Chris has ever,
he's never been disheveled in your life. Like, I mean,
no,
like,
I haven't.
You
I
look
love
at the guy.
Chris just needed to know that all the geese had flown south and that was it. They weren't even around. One of the things you touched on, JM, which is good to riff on, is the idea of input metrics versus output metrics. So PMF, NPS, I mean, anything that is a metric that we're looking at that is a result of multiple factors actually aren't the input metrics. So why don't we frame like, what is an output metric? What is an input metric? And why should people focus? Why is it good to focus on input metrics sometimes more than just output metrics?
I think I made those terms up. I mean, is that a real thing? If it is, then it's an accident. But let me give an example, right? At Uber, since you mentioned it, did you know I used to work at Uber? So at Uber, we found, you know, this is sort of the like seeing how people use the service. We found that after their second ride, someone would really stick. You know, first ride is like, I'm trying out this new thing, or I push a button and a car comes. But when I do my second ride, that's when I'm really locked in. And that strikes me as a bit of an output. You know, it's like, oh, we noticed that if someone likes the first ride enough and takes a second ride, that's an indicator that we're all good, you know, that we're going in the right direction. So then they, you know, then we started, or someone started saying, okay, well then let's like discount the second ride also. Like, let's make the first ride less expensive and the second ride to get people to that second ride metric faster, because then they'll stick. But the reality is the metric only worked when it was organic, when people were deciding to take the second ride and it became an indicator. And so I guess I would relate that, like, you can manipulate the stats, but then they might not mean the same thing. You know what I mean? So for example, with NPS, I don't think this is the case anymore, but there was a time when we only sent the survey to people who finished the program, and not everyone did that. Some people would, during the second sensor, maybe stop, or 27 days, and our system only acknowledge it after a full month. This is pretty early days, I think, that this was happening. And, you know, that is not a correct way to do NPS, because it's not hitting everybody. You'd want to touch everybody ideally. And when you do, the score is likely to adjust. And so I just think the metrics tell you things, but, you know, it has to be done right, and it has to be sort of viewed organically. You can't really like manipulate it, if that makes sense.
So the input metrics are, people would only take, we're going to just use this as like a thought exercise. So whether or not it's true, but The input metrics in this case, we're going to say is density, driver density in a certain geographic area. And so people only get to the second ride if there's enough density and drivers available where it's a great experience. And so hypothetically, people were willing to take a second ride. They go to hail a ride. They go to like hit the button, call the driver, and they're like, man, nothing's happening. The input metric is we need more drivers to get people to the second ride. We need more geographic density, so it's a great experience. The output metric is looking like it's terrible. And so then you come up with these other ideas like, hey, let's discount the second ride to incentivize people. But that's not what's broken. The input metric is the upstream thing that's broken that's not leading to the downstream effect that is what like people want to achieve.
That's right. If it's reliable, if the cost is right, if it just fits someone's life, they have the need for it, they can afford it, they just want to do it. If they want to do it, then they'll take the second ride. And that's an indicator to us that they're probably going to stick. Whereas most people took their, you know, I think the majority of riders who took their first ride did never come back, which is not necessarily surprising. Maybe they're traveling or for whatever reason, it's a once in a while thing. But if you start to meddle with the sort of underlying thing, then it might not still mean the same thing anymore, if that makes sense.
I think for us, what I would like to see us get to is to start to view these metrics more as like an early warning system than an actual weather forecast, if that makes sense. So if we see a rise or a drop in any of these metrics, it could be because we shipped a code update that made the app markedly slower and people are upset about that. Could mean we have a new flock of customers that we ran a promotion for that are now in the system that maybe don't quite understand it as much as the other ones do. It's just an alarm bell to get your ears to perk up to see, hey, is something amiss that we need to go chase down? Is there something we can dig into to learn from? And not necessarily that something's going wrong. Because yeah, I think we've all seen, Chris, just like your game example, you've got people helplessly addicted to a negative NPS game. There's examples on the other sides of it. So yeah, I think just building the discipline to not over-rotate and overreact, to be able to attribute specific things to the rises and falls in NPS or PMF, but just to have it as an early trigger to go check things out.
Yeah, we saw that with, Chris reported that with the scoring update when that was a push, right? Where it was like, scoring update was pushed and all of a sudden, what happened, Chris? Like, I don't remember. I remember things happened, but why don't we frame it with like what that whole thing was, because I didn't set that up very well.
In the app, we changed how we weighted the day score. So in terms of the, you know, the inputs that, you know, changed it. So that's it. And also the scale at which we had. So people came in and all of a sudden their score changed, or maybe it was a lot lower than they used to and they didn't understand why. Now for context on that one, I had a lot of the data we were getting was straight from support. So when I met with Sam and Scott and the team on this, I kind of prefaced it like, hey, my biggest ammo that I've got right now is all support data, which is only going to be negative. And I'm kind of looking at like, how big a spike did we get because of this? Because people aren't going to log into support to say, oh, I love the new scoring algorithm. It's great. And it's going to take a lot of surveys for that to, the likelihood that that would have shown up in an NPS survey is just really unlikely unless we actually guided them down that path through a structured survey. So in that case, those surveys a lot of times are very bad at picking up feature levels. Like you have to look at like more of the micro things, or you have to instruct your survey to actually specifically ask about that new feature and is it helpful or is it not? But for that one, we actually didn't have like an NPS or a CSAT read because we were reacting to it within like a matter of days from the release because of the spike of support calls. But I didn't have the other side of it, of people that actually said, I actually think this is better. I like it more. So I kind of caveated I've only got the bad news. I don't have the flip side because we were trying to react to it pretty quickly. I don't know if Scott felt that way during the conversation because he probably felt a little beat up by it. But
there's also times where NPS, like let's use, companies are constantly shipping new features. They're constantly shipping new products, like ancillary products, which are still related. So hypothetically, let's use Coke, like classic example. Coke shipped a product in the, I think it was the late 80s, which was Coke. They went to like Coke or the, like they've in early 2000s, they did like Clear Coke or something weird like that. That product, I don't think is on the shelves anymore, but like that would be a case where people might really like Coke and it's got a high NPS and a high like product market fit with certain people. But then there's this like, well, let's use, actually, I'm going to like break this whole thing apart. JM loves a certain type of Coke that's like sugar-free or something, or zero.
I love Diet Coke. It's a terrible addiction.
You might be upset if that went away, but then there's a new Coke product that comes out, this clear Coke, and like that doesn't do super well. So Coke has to go down this path of like figuring out what is broken, even though other things might indicate that they're doing really well. So companies should probably keep this lens that everything they're doing always needs to be broken down to these micro levels to say, like, is this new thing adding the source of value that we thought it would have before we went down the path of like building or launching it?
I likely kicked the Coke and Diet Coke habit years ago, and I now only drink Athletic Greens. I would recommend it to everyone. It's the best ever.
This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. I got to be honest with you, Chris. I signed up for it yesterday.
Did you?
I used Athletic Greens way back in the day before it was called AG1 or whatever. But now they come in individual packets, which just for my life, the messes that I make is going to be great. And yeah, I ordered it yesterday. I'm excited about it. And we want to thank them for not being a sponsor of this podcast.
When I had a bunch of guys visit the ranch last month, because I was drinking, they all kind of gave me the like, what are you drinking? Some green healthy drink? And they gave me a hard time about it. And I was like, try it. And three out of the four that tried it, be like, they sat down like, yeah, this is great. I'm going to order it. So, I mean, I was kind of lightly promoting it, but I'm more like, here, take the Pepsi challenge. You try it. If you like it, then grade it. So it was more for them about a free sample plus an endorsement. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm ordering it tomorrow. So
very nice.
There you have it. If we're looking at what we should do moving forward, it sounds like there's no reason we should abort anything.
Yeah, maybe let me bring it home, because we've been measuring NPS so far. We just started with PMF pretty recently. I kind of took the position that we need to stop measuring NPS because I'm not sure that it's actionable for us right now. So maybe we can talk about that. But I think more broadly, I would like to know, if we have a strategy of building an NPS unicorn, do we ever think we're going to get to something like 90? I think that structurally, my opinion is that we're not going to. And I just want to be clear about that, not necessarily being a bad thing, because I don't want it to push us into weird behavior to try to jump through hoops to make it so, when the nature of our product is just that we're not going to get to a 90. So maybe we can talk about those two things.
What does NPS unicorn mean though, right? Like, it's obviously it's a number, it's being one in a million in that regard, but I feel like it's more of a philosophy that I think Ben could probably expound upon a little.
Yeah, so it was the way it came about was it was outlined as one of the goals or the values of growth, and it maybe is looked at as more of a literal metric as opposed to a philosophy. So the philosophy is, what are we going to do to delight people? What are we going to do the right thing and to have that be our North Star, as opposed to saying, like, what is the opposite of an NPS unicorn? It's like, well, just hacking attention and doing all these like undercutting things and growing at all costs, right? Like, there are all these things that are the opposite of being an NPS unicorn. And so the idea is, what can we philosophically do as a company, as a brand, from a growth standpoint, from an op standpoint, from a product standpoint? What can we do that is delightful and that it is steering people in the right direction, as opposed to, let's use product. There are probably things we could do that would make the product highly addictive, but that wouldn't be the right thing to do, even though it might give us really good stickiness or retention metrics, right? So it's like, what do we need to do to actually impact a billion people in the world? What do we need to do to educate the world about metabolic health? That's the philosophy of this idea of NPS unicorn, where it's related to NPS and it is doing the right thing, but it's not necessarily, we want to be thought of as an aspirational brand, as opposed to a company that everyone goes like, they're big, but I don't really like them. And I think that's where it all comes from.
Yeah. So maybe the unicorn part, I'm curious, because the term is very overloaded in tech startup land. So is there room for us to call it something else, like an NPS shining star, for example? Well, I don't know what goes after NPS. Yeah,
but no, NPS semicorn we're going with.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about the semicorn. Yeah, look, I agree with the thrust of your comments. I think that getting a team focused on building a delightful experience across an entire company is very admirable. My worry and the initial thing that I set out to do with my comments around this whole discussion was, I don't know that we're ever going to get to 90 just because we deal with a health-focused product. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. So if it's not 90, then what is it? What is the bellwether number that we can say, hey, if we clear this, we can know we're doing amazing? Like, what, you know, what are we trying to answer there? I'm still not clear on that.
For me, this relates to the idea that I think is fake and I made up about input and output metrics. Like, there isn't anything specifically about the high number that we want. We want a business that people feel so great about that we get that output. So for me, it is more philosophical. It's about building in a way that will be delightful and long-term focused and not tricking people into making incremental purchases and not just thinking about short-term money stuff, but being kind of long-term focused, giving away as much value as we do and making people love us by being worthy of their love. And then down the line, and I think it takes years to get there, you hope that that comes out in the scores, that if people feel that strongly about it, that it bears out in whatever feedback they give us, whether it's numerical or constant, you know, usage of the app. But I like the term because it sort of like points people sort of simply in that direction. You know, this is about delighting folks for the long term because it's such an important thing.
Yeah.
Scott, your question around being in the healthcare space, the benchmark for NPS for healthcare companies for last year was a plus 38. So you may say like, okay, being in this space is going to have a natural drag. Obviously, we're not like in the airline or cable space, but like that could be the, if we fall below kind of general healthcare, then that's a flag to me in general. I like having them as some type of like barometer, but I don't think we should be solving for the number and for the metric. I think it, to your point, it should be like a, if we do a great job, these numbers will naturally come and get higher by us doing great work and solving important problems of having people have better health outcomes. And if we do that and we do it well, and we do it at a great price point, then these scores will come. Like right now, our biggest reason for detraction is price. And we know like we're doing lots of things to actually work on that. But like, yeah, if we made the product free tomorrow, our score would probably jump 30 points.
Yeah. We'd have a true NPS unicorn.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, this is a much more tactical question. Maybe where do we go from here? The big question for me going forward, now that we have both NPS and PMF, is do we keep NPS around? Is there any reason for us to keep it around right now when we're still searching for the ability to cross the chasm effectively? I would argue no. I will sort of steel man another side of the argument, which is to say, during the discussion that we had on Notion about NPS and PMF, the comment was brought up, and I liked it a lot, that NPS might be more of a way for us to know if we're nailing the community, the identity, the belonging piece of Levels. When I think about other products like Peloton, I will really go out of my way to talk about Peloton because I feel like my identity is as a Peloton rider. That is part of who I am as Scott. And so I think that maybe when we think about NPS and PMF, it might be worth it for us in the short term to turn off NPS because we have such a limited window of attention. People are very survey fatigued. We've got few shots to actually get some actionable feedback from people. And I think using those on NPS might not be the best use of our time right now. And then as we layer on more of the social pieces as time goes on, bringing back NPS to specifically test for those might be a good bellwether for us or a good indicator for us on if we're doing the social stuff, the identity stuff, the belonging stuff, if we're doing it well. Chris, do you have any thoughts on whether we should keep it around or not? You look at these numbers more than I do, so.
I have an action item that I think I talked to you, Scott, about. I wanted to, for weeks 1, 2, and 3, where I actually put the survey in the email, I'm going to completely use that as a PMF plus a couple extra product questions to go deeper on it and remove NPS from weeks 1, 2, and 3. That was an experiment, and I learned what's the drag on NPS for those 3 weeks. Taking it out of the end of the month program is more difficult because that was engineering built custom code, and that would take engineering things. So it's not just me swapping out a survey link. So it might be easier for us to say, let's reduce the number of samples for NPS, ramp up PMF, focus on PMF, and kind of still do both as we work on some of these things that take more engineering to actually swap it out. Because David and team actually built their own survey and then just passed the data through the API. It's not like a link to a survey that I can just swap out like a type form.
And keep getting deeper on product metrics.
Yeah, and they also like pass a bunch of data through it. So I can, that my ability to link like gender, age, and other things to it for slicing is super easy that I don't get when I do that in the week 1, 2, and 3 because I just threw a survey link in versus a deep integration. So I think there's short term, and then we think about like long term, like what's the right approach?
Chris, do you have a closet you can go to? It's very serious, like a closet with clothes hanging up. Go in there.
Now I'm in my bedroom on a bed with carpet on the floor.
Way better.
Wow.
You sound way better.